The kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for a denarius a day, he sent them into his vineyard, and going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, "You go into the vineyard too, and whatever is right, I will give you." So they went. Then going out again, this is the master, about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, he did the same. And about the 11th hour, he, the master, went out and found others standing. And he said to them, "Why do you stand here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." And he said to them, "You go into the vineyard too." And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the laborers, pay them their wages, beginning with the last up to the first." And when those hired about the 11th hour came, each of them received a denarius. Now when those hired first came, they thought they would receive more, but each of them also received a denarius. And on receiving it, they grumbled at the master of the house, saying, These last worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us, who've borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last worker as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or do you begrudge my generosity?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. This is the word of the Lord. I'm aging as I stand before you. I was at First Pres Baton Rouge at my old congregation, and they're all like, "Man, you look older. I don't know what it is. I don't know what happened to you." Like, thanks, appreciate that. You know, one of the things is as I'm getting older and I'm embracing this fact is that I'm becoming my father. You know, and that's a scary and joyful thing. But one of the things my dad would say a lot is, "Life isn't fair. Get used to it." Anybody, any of y'all said something like this before to people? Great fatherly saying. And I remember a couple of years ago, Arden had taken the girls out to go shopping. They needed some clothes. And so they went out and they bought dresses and socks and bows and all these sorts of things. And they come home with all of their stuff, and the girls are proudly presenting it to me. You know, "Here it is, here's my stuff, blah, blah, blah." And my son is standing there. He, of course, didn't go shopping with them. And he looks at what they're doing and he says, "Hey, I didn't get anything. That's not fair." And I wanted to be my father. You know, like I wanted to say to him, "Life's not fair, get used to it," but I didn't do it. I held myself back. Or you remember that feeling as a kid, like, you know, your older brother would sock you in the stomach and take your toy and like get away with it. And it was, "That's not fair. It's not." Or you'd be playing in the neighborhood and somebody cheated the game. "Hey, that's not fair." Or you grow up and you go into high school and you turn 16, and 4 days later it's hangout fest and you decide that you and six of your friends are going to drive to Gulf Shores and see the greatest band of all time with 10,000 drunk people and then drive home that night. And you go to your mom and you think, this is a no-brainer, right? And you're laughing because you know what I'm going to say. And they say, "Hey, we want to go to hangout fest." Your mom's like, "You're crazy. You're not going to that thing. You're crazy." And then with that, like, every bit of teenage angst and rage and hormone-soaked body that you have, you just scream back at them, "This isn't fair." Then we grow up. Of course, you grow up, and you grow out of these sort of things because you learn, right? I mean, you get your paycheck, and you look at it, and you think, "This isn't fair. I deserve more than this." You know, there's somebody that gets recognition in some area of life, and you think, "I worked harder than that guy. Why is he getting all the praise when I'm the one who really didn't?" Or you have this little dialogue in your head with your spouse. And I don't know if y'all play this game, but sometimes in my head, if she gets something or does something and I don't get it, then I'm thinking to myself, that's really not fair. I don't understand why she gets to do this and I don't get to do anything else. I mean, even our news stations are branded with fairness. News is to be fair and balanced. We are a culture obsessed with fairness. And what's so interesting is, for as much as we bemoan the state of morals in our society, as much as we bemoan the idea that we live in this moral relativity, you know, that the right and wrong is up for grabs, there's no absolutes, everybody determines their own sense of what they think is right, there is this counter obsession at the same time, and it's not even Christian, with fairness, with equality. And when I say fairness, what I'm really saying is fairness is a justice word. It's a word about what is right and what is wrong. For all of the moral relativity that our culture preaches, they hang very dearly onto the idea that there is some universal sense of fairness. We're a people obsessed with fairness. And let me give you a definition, a simple definition of what I think fairness is. You can break this apart later, but for the sake of the parable, let's say this. I think fairness is getting what you deserve. Fairness is getting what you deserve. I think unfairness is not getting what you deserve. And that may be important when we talk about this parable this morning. Because this parable this morning, I think, has everything to do with fairness. Jesus is talking to a group of people in a culture that are obsessed with this idea of what is fair. You know, we sometimes think that life changes a lot. The human heart is the same. People were as obsessed with right and wrong and fairness then as they are today, maybe even more so. The religion of Jesus' day, I think, had been turned into a religion of fairness. Judaism, you know, at one sense was about the worship of the one true God who had liberated his people and made covenant promises. And what the Pharisees had done is perverted it down to a religion of you get what you deserve. And the idea was, you know, if you're good, you get good. If you're bad, you get bad. This worked out great for the Pharisees because they were good. And so they thought they deserved good things, and that other people in the Gospels, we call them sinners, people who had done bad, therefore deserved bad things. It's a religion of fairness. You see what I'm saying? And so it began to manifest itself in different ways. That is, one of the things that happens is we see in the Gospels that the way the Pharisees had labeled people, like people that were blind, people that were lame, people that had physical issues, they labeled them as sinners. Because what they thought was an evil had come upon you in this sort of physical problem, and that therefore must have meant that you did something wrong. See how the equation in religion is you get what you deserve either way? It was a very defined system. And the problem with it is that Jesus Christ steps right into the middle of it and he begins to blow the whole thing up. So what he does is he starts showing favor to these sinners. He starts healing the lame and the sick and the blind, and that gets Jesus in as much trouble as anything else that he does. Don't miss that fact. People get mad when Jesus heals people, and you may have read the Gospels and thought, I don't understand that. The reason they're getting mad is because Jesus is calling into question the very heart of this religious system of fairness. And he's getting all sorts of pushback for it. And so in response to this, Jesus tells a parable. He has to explain what it is that he is doing and is about. And he says this. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like a master of a house who went out early to hire laborers for his vineyard. Obviously, we've been doing this for a couple weeks now. The master is Jesus, God, right? He's a wealthy man. He has a vineyard. And the workers, these laborers, are supposed to be us. Now, when he says workers, you need to understand the context of this. These are what we would call day laborers. So in this society, what would happen is there was a class of workers, and it still goes on today, that would show up in the center of town every day, and they would stand there, and they would wait for one of these wealthy people to come and hire them. And of course, you know, it was a beauty contest in a sense. You'd walk in as a master and you'd look at who looks like the most able and the most fit, and they would get the wage. And the wage that they would get was a denarius. And a denarius is one day's wage. A denarius was just enough for you to survive one day of life, no more and no less. You would work one day, you would have enough to eat, you'd have to come back, and you'd have to work again another day. So the master sets up this deal. Okay, he goes out very early in the morning, beginning of the day, first hour. He hires a set of guys. They go work in his vineyard, denarius. Then the master comes back to the center of town and he sees all the other workers still standing idle. Maybe he thought they were going to get hired away, but he realizes they're not. And so we capture this little sense of the master's heart. This is compassion. This is compassion what the master's going to do. He looks at these ones and he decides to hire them. This is about 9 o'clock in the morning. He says, go work in my vineyard. I'll pay you what's fair. Then he goes back to the marketplace at noon. He sees men still standing there. He hires them, sends them to the vineyard. He goes back at 3 o'clock, at 11th hour, 5 o'clock, and he asks the men, why are you standing idle? And the men say, because no one has hired us. And he has compassion upon these men because he knows if he doesn't hire these men, then those men and their families are not going to eat that day. And so he takes the men and he gives them a job in his vineyard. Now here's where it gets interesting. You understand the premise here? People hire at all kinds of different times of day. It's end of the day. It's time to get paid. So everybody lines up. Now remember, Jesus has said the verse before this, before he starts the parable, the last shall be first, the first shall be last. So there's a gospel lesson going on in all of this. But everybody lines up and he tells his foreman to pay the ones who came in last first. It's confusing. The guys who come in at 5 o'clock in the 11th hour, he says, line them up, the ones from the latest to the earliest, pay the ones who came in the latest in the day, the first. Now, this is a demonstration of the gospel, but it has also a different effect for the parable, something very practical. When the 11th hour guy gets paid, what that allows to happen is for the first hour guy to see what the 11th hour guy gets paid. You get it? So the first hour workers are watching what's happening when the guy who came at 5 o'clock and 3 o'clock and 12 o'clock all get paid. They all get a denarius, the guys who come late. So what's the natural thought? Well, they worked an hour, they worked 2 hours, they worked 3 hours. Okay, well, I worked 12 hours. So certainly I'm going to get more than a denarius. And they come to the front of the line and the master hands them one denarius. And they get mad. And they push back on the master. And what they say is, you know, there's a sense in which they say, hey, we've worked all day in the heat of the day. How is it that the guys who came later got, quote, equal pay to us? Equality is a fairness word. What they are saying to the master is, this isn't fair. You're not being fair. And the master says, hold on there, partner. Did I not pay you what I agreed to pay you? Did you not get what you deserve? No, I've been fair. What is it to you what I do with what is mine? Or do you begrudge my generosity? And all of a sudden, we've been talking about fair and unfair, and Jesus introduces this very important word of generosity. And if I were going to define generosity, I would say generosity is getting something that you don't deserve. Should I make this really confusing and say it all at once? Fairness is getting what you deserve. Unfairness is not getting what you deserve. Generosity is getting something that you don't deserve. See how that it all changes the words all throughout the thing. This is great preaching to be completely confusing. And I think the point that Jesus is making here about the generosity of Jesus is actually one of the most difficult things to understand about the gospel. And it's a difficulty that Christians and non-Christians struggle to understand. It is the distinction and the difference between God's fairness and God's generosity. That what we do very often is we over-equate generosity with fairness, and we don't understand the difference of the two, and we mix the whole thing up. Look, this is what my son is doing, right? My son looks at the girls, they're getting all these clothes, and he says, "It's not fair." And I say, "You want fair? Let's do fair. Let's go out and buy you a couple dresses and some bows. That would be fair." He said, "No, I don't want to. No, Dad, that's not what I want to do." Like, and I was like, "No, you said you wanted fair. I mean, they got dresses. Let's get you dresses, right? Okay, in fact, and this is where I really become my father. I said, "You know, you want to do fair. Let's talk fair. You owe me $379,682.52. Because that's how much I've spent on you. That would be fair." "No, my son, you don't want fairness from me. What you want is generosity." And see, I think what the struggle is in the Christian life is to understand the distinction between fairness and generosity. We mistake the two. And one of the key reasons that we mistake the difference for God's fairness and God's generosity is because we are wholly biased toward ourselves. We are wholly biased. What we do is that we write the story of justice in our favor every single time. Here's me. Something goes right in my life. Something good happens to me. Here's the story I tell myself. Great job. You did it. You earned it. Aren't you wonderful? Congratulations. Flip that on its head. Something goes bad. I get evil. I don't get what I want. You know what the story I tell myself is? I don't deserve this. This is unfair. You know, it's, and I've said this many times, this is social media. I get on social media, it's such an example of how I write my own story. And you know, I see all these pictures of y'all's wonderful life and your beautiful kids and all the great things and the tremendous moments that you're having. And I don't have a heart that's like, "Wow, I'm glad for them to do that," you know? Unfortunately, the story I'm writing in my head is, that's not fair. It's not fair that my kids aren't as smart as theirs. It's not fair. Like, they're in Tahiti on vacation, and I'm slugging it out in Crichton. That's not fair. And what I'm doing is, I'm writing the story of justice in my own. I'm wholly biased. Like, because, just intellectually, logically, on what grounds do I make the judgment that that's fair or not fair? I mean, what are the grounds whereby I determine that I deserve every single wonderful and good thing on the planet? The grounds are that I've declared myself the judge of fairness, and I'm always right. And you know, I think one of the interesting things about what we've been doing in these parables is that I've seen this come up I've seen the bias towards ourselves come up in really strange ways. I told the parable, we preached on the parable of the prodigal son a couple of weeks ago. You know the one where there's the younger son who takes all the money of the father, runs away, spends it on women and drugs, and comes back. Father welcomes him. And then there's the older son who does everything right, you know, and he's over there mad. One of the interesting things that's happened, I think, over the course of my ministry is I am at this point, most people are sympathizing with the older brother. It's very surprising change that's going on. I think earlier in ministry, I would hear a lot of people seeing themselves more as the prodigal son. But as time goes on, more and more what I see is people would say things like this to me, like, I get it with the older brother. I'm sympathetic. He's done everything right. I feel like the older brother. And it had nothing to do with being Christian or not Christian. What it has to do with is this point of being wholly biased towards ourselves. Everybody sees themselves as an older brother. That is, people write the story in their head that they've done all the right things. You know, there was a time when people said, you know what, I'm doing a lot of things wrong. No. The times have changed. People are wholly biased towards themselves, write the story in their favor every single time. And it happens in this parable. I bet subconsciously when you're reading this story, the person that you identify with is not the 11th hour worker, it's the first hour worker. You're like, yeah, I get it. I mean, you work 10 hours and you get one denarius, and he works, you know, 1 hour and he gets the same pay. I mean, equal pay, equal work. This is not, here's the point of this. We always write the story in favor of ourselves, that we've done right, that we're deserving, that we're the older brother and the first hour Christian. And you know what the scriptures do? They espouse the exact opposite worldview. The scriptures are saying, no. You're not a first hour worker. You're an 11th hour worker. The scriptures say things like this, Romans 3:9, all, both Jews and Greeks, are under sin. As it is written, no one is righteous, no, not one. No one understands, no one seeks God. All have turned aside, no one does good, not even one. You want to know the truth of who you are, you aren't good. You aren't deserving. You aren't righteous. You aren't the one who has worked all day. You're not even the 11th hour. And what the Bible says, Romans 6:23, it says that what you have earned, the wages of your sin, is death. And I wonder if the Apostle Paul had this parable in mind when he wrote that verse. He's talking in economic language here. He's saying that the wage of what you've deserved from your life is sin. It's not that you're a first hour worker and you've been doing everything right and that you can make demands. No, the hourly wage that you have merited is death. And therefore, you don't want God to be fair. You want God to be generous. You don't want God to be fair with you. If he was to be fair, then what you deserve is death. But in fact, the gospel is that God has been not fair to you, he has been generous to you. And that the generosity meant that he had to be unfair to his son, Jesus Christ. The generosity isn't free. That the heart of it is to offer you generosity meant that he had to be unfair to that Jesus Christ unfairly goes to the cross. He did not merit death. He merited life. He merited righteousness. He merited the favor of the Father. And yet for the one who deserved all those things, he gives them up in order that you might receive what was his. He takes your unrighteousness, you get his righteousness. He's abandoned. You're called as a son. The iniquity is laid upon him. The forgiveness is given to you. You don't want God to be fair. You want God to be generous. And this is what Jesus is pointing out to them. Grace is a much more difficult thing to understand than we give it credit for. And I don't care how long you've been a Christian, it's still baffling. There's still this part of us that wants to begrudge the generosity of the Master, and it still bugs us that we can't. Because the thing about generosity is, it is the gift of the giver to the recipient without obligation or contract, which means you cannot make a demand on generosity. This drives us crazy, and it's so backwards, because it's like, okay, God's giving us this thing, and you think you would take it, but what we want to do in sin, we want to control it, and we want to make demands, and we want to say it's got to be, it's like this. You know, you go over to somebody's house for dinner, and they invite you over to a really beautiful dinner, and they bring out a beautiful steak, and it's cooked perfectly, and it's filet mignon, and it's really expensive, and you look at it and you go, I kind of wanted ahi tuna. Now, you wouldn't do that, right? You wouldn't imagine to do that in your southern sensibilities. That would be rude. And the reason it's rude is because you don't make demands upon generosity. All you can do is receive it and enjoy it. See, if you're operating on the paradigm of fairness, if your religion is like that of the Pharisees, then sure, you control what God gives and what he doesn't give because you've earned it. You can say, God, I deserved this. But if you have come to understand you're a sinner saved by grace, but for the generosity of God, you make no demands upon grace. You receive it and you enjoy it and you love it. And what that does is it transforms people. People who understand that they have deserved death, but that they have gotten the generosity of God, are people who are humble. And what that means is they're people who have stopped making claims about how great they are or how deserving they are or how much they have merited the grace of God. They're humble. You know, fairness people, they're not humble, and they shouldn't be, right? I mean, if your system is, I've earned it, I've deserved it, therefore, then you don't have any reason to be humble about anything. You did it. People who understand the generosity of God are, and it's not because, okay, I went to church, and you know, it's sort of, yeah, come on, you know this. You think humility is like one of those churchy things that pastors tell you and you expect to hear at church, right? I'm not saying go and, you know, let's try to be humble this week, everybody. You know, I'm not going to brag about myself. No, I'm talking about grabbing a hold of the gospel and it welling up something inside of you that is humility. Humility is the fruit of somebody who knows they're a sinner saved by grace. It's something that is the fruit of a deeper realization. And what that humility produces is a life of gratitude. I mean, when the story you're writing of your life is, I have deserved nothing, but I have gotten everything because of the grace of God in Christ Jesus, then what you do is you live a life of gratitude. It's not a moment. It's not a, when we serve, we give something, you know, Christmas, my kids open the presents. Thanks, Dad. Moving on, you know, they don't care. Like, you know, that's called cheap grace when we do that. Hey, really glad, thanks. Now I'm going to go do what I want to do. No, what we're talking about is people who understand the generosity of God in their life. Their life is that of gratitude. Every moment is, I am living and breathing, but by the grace of God. And what that then produces is joy. When the story of your life is not, I've earned it, I've deserved it, I've got to make demands. When the story of your life is, I'm not righteous, I haven't merited anything. I deserve death. And yet I've gotten life in Christ. Then what that produces is joy. You know, it's really good to work and achieve a goal. And you know, when you have those moments, you're glad for them and you experience, but there is nothing like the joy of being a recipient of grace. I remember the moment. I remember being the recipient of grace, of having the generosity of God flow into my life and thinking, I am completely forgiven. I am forever loved. I am absolutely free from the chains of my sin and my wages. And that was joy unlike any other. I mean, I've had lots of fun moments. I've been to cool places. I have nice things. I've, you know, earned great stuff in my life. Let me tell you, nothing compares to being the recipient of generosity. Beloved, you don't want God to be fair. You want God to be generous. Let's pray.